or since Joe Biden and Kamala Harris won and Trump lost. Yep, that's right. Trump is a loser, a total loser, the biggest loser. But since he's a fascist, he's not just deluding himself, denying that he lost. He is making serious attempts to reverse his defeat and install himself as president for the next 4 years. And let's be frank, if he gets away with stealing this election, it would be president for life. People have rightly pointed to the damage he could do in the next 2 months before January 20th. Again, think about the horror and the danger of 4 more years. That danger is not over yet. So that's one thing we're going to be talking about today. The other thing this election showed is that there is a real fascist movement in the United States of America. 70 million people voted for Trump, not despite all his crimes, his racism, misogyny, and xenophobia, but because of it. At the back end of the show, we'll bring you a discussion of the pledge to all the people of the world. In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept the fascist America. The Trump-Pence regime must go. Now, this pledge was signed by a diverse group of public intellectuals, artists, and others, and was published as an ad in the New York Times on November 9th. We'll hear the pledge and a conversation about it with Andy Z and Coco Das of Refuse Fascism, interviewed by Sansara Taylor. And opening the show up, we're going to share an interview with Sansara Taylor on the courageous freedom fighters who confronted the fascist march for Trump in Washington, D.C. on November 14th, and why it is crucial to not allow the fascists to march unopposed. So let's hear Sansara Taylor interviewed by Lucha Bright.
Hi, I'm Lucha Bright with the Revolution Club, and I'm here with Sansara Taylor, who's on the National Editorial Board of RefuseFascism.org, and she's a co-host for the Revolution Nothing Less show on YouTube. Hi, Sansara.
Hey, Lucha. Great to be here.
Hello, everybody. So Sansara and I have been running together in the streets of D.C., and this past Saturday, yesterday, Refuse Fascism nationally called for protests across the country, and here in D.C. going right up against the Million MAGA March. Do you want to tell us a little bit about why Refuse Fascism called for these protests?
Yeah. So first of all, Donald Trump lost the election. I know we all know that, but he's refusing to admit that. He's lying about it, and he's working to overturn that. And actually, we were just close, in very close quarters with thousands of MAGA assholes who either refuse to admit that they know that or outright are so deluded by conspiracy and lie mongering that they actually believe Trump won. So Trump lost, which was a great victory for the people, and people overcame a lot of obstacles to deliver that electoral defeat. People, especially black people, overcame misleading robocalls, voter intimidation, long-ass lines in the South. Some of them waited 10, 12 hours to vote in racist voter suppression due to racist voter suppression. There was a lot people had to go up against and did go up against, including in a pandemic, to deliver a major electoral defeat to Donald Trump, which was a great victory. And for good reason, people poured into the streets and danced in the streets and celebrated about that, and felt that a weight was lifted from them. And yet here we are a week later, and Trump is still lying about this. He's actively obstructing the transition, which is costing lives right now, mm-hmm. in COVID deaths and in other ways. And he is riling up a base to actually try to overturn this election. So for all those reasons, we felt very important that we bring our side into the public square to stand on this victory, to say the election is over, Trump lost, Biden won, Trump's got to go, let's move on, but let's keep the public square until that victory is cemented, until he's actually out of the White House. And frankly, all his attempts to undermine the election themselves are grounds for removal. Those are fascist moves. And we shouldn't be normalized just because it's Trump and we've lived through it for 4 years. Here is a sitting president who is refusing to concede when he lost, and is doing great damage, and now whips up thousands or tens of thousands of his most violent white supremacist thuggish supporters to maraud in the nation's seat of power and to work to overturn that election. That has to be answered. So we felt it was very important that we go and we counter protest and stand up against that and rally our side to see this defeat of this fascist regime all the way through until they're removed from power.
Thank you, really important. Can you just describe like what the scene was like here in DC? Who were the fascists that were out, and what did Refuse Fascism do?
Yeah, so the streets of DC were filled with every variety of white supremacist, militia type, conspiracy-minded, QAnon, deranged Christian fascist. I mean, we saw hatred organized writ large against Black people, against immigrants, against women, and it was an attempt, and I think they gained ground in this, of these fascist forces who actually were put on the defensive, who did suffer a bit of a defeat. They did have a puff taken out of their chest when they lost that election, when Trump lost the election, and when they saw people pour into the streets with all that exuberance and all that joy and all that weight was lifted. This took a lot of the puff out of their chest, and they were trying to come back together and reassert their dominance in the public square, and I think they actually made ground in that, including that Trump came through and greeted it. He gave it his backing. And so we went in the middle of this. And just so people know, like, these were people, hundreds of them chanting, "Break out Kyle," talking about Kyle Rittenhouse, the 17-year-old who murdered two protesters for Black Lives in Kenosha, Wisconsin, who shot them dead in the street. This is a hero of these people. There were Christian fanatics, fascists, walking through with signs that said, "Women belong in the kitchen." Just straight up enslavement. They're people that you would say, "Well, what about the children in the cages?" And they'd be like, "Ah, they belong there. Their parents did something illegal." I mean, these people they've got nothing inside of them for humanity. But they were out there and they were filled with a lust for revenge. And so we went right in the middle of the Freedom Plaza area where they were first amassing. We went early in the day and we raised the banner, "Trump Pence out now." We raised signs that said the same. It was a small group of us. We never got our whole group in one place because because Trump gave his backing, this became a mushroomed size outpouring of fascists. So it was a smaller grouping of us at the beginning of the day. And from the second we did this, we were set upon. I mean, these people were incensed. And that's the thing about fascism. They have this false sense of victimhood. So they first started verbally harassing us. And then they were kind of forcefully, purposefully bumping into us. And then within a couple of minutes, there was hundreds of them surrounding us, grabbing at us. At times, you'd have five different big meathead men with their hands on you, pulling you in different directions, grabbing your sign, hitting you. They ripped up our sound system. I mean, they were a mob, mm-hmm. And they were very threatening. And there was one of the people with us. This was a Black woman who, by the time we got through this, and I will say, for our crew was so, they were so beautiful. They had such heart, you know. So I think the Washington Post described it at different points. The women who led the march would break out of the mob and start chanting, "Trump, pack your shit. You're illegitimate," or "Trump Pence out now." And then we'd be swallowed again. And then we'd break out again. We'd chant it again. But the whole time we kept regrouping and keeping our message together and keeping our people together and our spirit intact. But I will say, by the time we got through that, and this lasted for two blocks, we were dogged like this and assaulted like this as we marched along. And when we finally got clear and ended up on the other side of a police line through some struggle that we had with the police as well, to actually do this semblance of their job and stop a mob and a mob assault, or at least let us get out of reach of it. When we got to the other side of the police line, this one Black woman who was with us, she was just sobbing. And she kept saying, she was unconsolable. She kept saying, "I'm wrong for being Black. I'm wrong for being a woman. My life is in danger every single day," and there was so much hate. That was so much hate they threw at me, and her eyes were just pouring, you know? And it really was, these really are people. Baba Vakin has said there's a direct line from the Confederacy to the Trump-Pence regime to the fascism of today. This really is the inheritors of the Confederacy, people who never reconciled themselves to the end of the Civil War. These are the people who would have gathered with their children to watch black people be lynched, and then fought with each other over getting a souvenir, a piece of the mutilated body, or a postcard from that experience. These were people who were filled with blood loss and out for revenge. And you saw it all day long. At the end of the night, they were marauding. They came through Black Lives Matter, tore up the murals, tore up the pictures, and they're like maniac, lunatic, animal-like, you know, shouting and assaulting pieces of wood that say Black Lives Matter on them, you know, wishing they could be doing it to people. And so it was a very heavy experience to go right up against this like that. But it mattered, because this has to be opposed. They can't be allowed to dominate the public square and the public discourse. And it's shameful that there weren't more people out there, that everybody who was out celebrating, rightfully so, celebrating when Trump lost, should have been out there standing up against this. It would have been a world of difference. The amount of hatred, that needs to stay on the defensive. You know, this, we ran into after we did this protest, we went to Black Lives Matter Plaza, just a few blocks away. And one of the people we ran into there, I was talking to them, and they said, you know, they got off the train at Union Station, and they're young and they're gay, and visibly, you might guess that from them. And they were set upon by five of these MAGA fascists with flak vests on, surrounded this person, said, oh, you're gay, you're a faggot, you're this, started hurling all these slurs at them and physically domineering and intimidating them. And then a sixth one joined in who wasn't even with them. And they said, you know, I just thought to myself, I've got to get down to the White House. Maybe if I get there, I'll find my people. And so they got there and they said, yeah, I found my people. But, and the black woman who was with us, who, and the others who were with us, who were really shook coming through the crowded fascists, when we got down to Black Lives Matter Plaza and we rallied and we came back together, I mean, people saw that through, and they took all that, all of the emotion that they felt about what was hurled at them and what the history of that and the threat of that writ large for the future, and they poured it out in their chants and their dance and their song and their sense of standing together, and it actually felt really good to stand up, you know. And the idea that you hide from this and you go in your home and you avoid the confrontation, that is a morally compromised place to be, and it does damage. And because of that, it doesn't feel nearly as good as standing and being in the face of this and coming through that. And I was so proud of the people who stood up. Mm-hmm. And I know that we gave voice to what millions and millions feel, but those millions have to join this, because there is actually a fight for the future that is still ongoing. And Trump is still in power, and these MAGA fascists are marauding, and they must not be allowed to dominate the public space and the public discourse.
I was going to ask you about the, you know, what you would want to say to the people, or what you do say to the people who told everybody going into this. There was a whole outcry going into this of, don't go into the streets. It was all over the internet. Stay home. You're going to provoke these people. You're going to provoke Trump. And I think you've spoken to that some already, but if there's more you want to say about that, maybe you can say something.
Yeah, I'll just say, look, the fascist Trump-Pence regime, a genocidal racist regime, is still in power. They are unleashing their mobs in the streets. Hiding from that will not make them go away. It will make them stronger. And I'm sorry, if you want to spend more energy, which way too many woke and progressive people did, more energy condemning those who stand up against fascists and white supremacists than you want to put into standing up against those fascists and white supremacists, you are no different than the people who told the Freedom Riders, don't go to the South. Don't provoke them. Who, when they were set upon by mobs, said, well, why did you rile them up? Things were calm before this. Mm-hmm. You know, you're no different than the people who told Frederick Douglass, don't publish your memoir and don't go on a speaking tour, because you might push things a little bit too far. We're getting towards abolition, just want to go a little slower. I mean, there's a Larry Kramer. Everybody loves Larry Kramer today. There's movies made about him, and for good reason, who led ACT UP, who led a lot of the struggle against to wake people up to the AIDS epidemic and get help for people who were dying, gay men especially, in massive numbers. But at the time, Larry Kramer was very unpopular. And I'm sorry, the verdict is in history, and it applies today. You know, there's always those who say, you know, you're protesting in the wrong way. Oh, you're protesting at the wrong time. I actually had somebody tell me today that they could come up with 100 examples of how protests led to less freedom. Poorly planned protests. No, oppression leads to less freedom. Standing up against it leads to more freedom. Okay, I'm sorry. That's the way the f***ing world works. And even protests that maybe are poorly planned or not the most strategically thought through, you still put your arms around people who are on the right side. One side is right and one side is wrong. And those who stand up, even sometimes when they do it without the fullest strategic sense, they're not the cause of oppression. And all those people who say, you're the reason, who blame the victims and blame those who stand up against it, I'm sorry, you're on the wrong side of history on this. And you got to get over to the right side. Because a lot of those people, I think they actually do, they're of two minds. They do actually want to see the Trump horrors ended. But for a long time, they have been very resistant to doing the hard work and the struggle that's required to stop this. And you see that playing out now, too, where they say, okay, now we've got a victory, let's lay low. And you know what? With fascists, you don't lay low. You got a victory, you take that, you run the table with it. Let's stay in the public square. Let's stay on the offensive. Let's stay saying Black Lives Matter. Let's stay saying women are full of human beings. Let's stay saying get the children out of the cages because they're still in f***ing cages. Why would you lay low when all that's still going on and they're threatening to overturn your victory? You stand on that victory and you keep going forward and you give space and oxygen to those who've been suffering under it to come join you and stand up and actually fight for and win a different future. That's what we were fighting for yesterday. That's what I think people should take from it who are part of it. It was very heroic. It's very important. And that's what other people need to join with. We need to see it all the way through. Get Trump and Pence all the way out of office. And then we can have, and many of us will continue to fight for going deeper and getting to the roots of this fascism and all the oppression and injustice that's rooted in this system and the need for a whole revolution. And other people will split off and go different ways and we'll have the freedom and the space to have that debate and wage that struggle.
Okay, well, thank you so much. This was a really important discussion and I'm so glad we were able to have it.
Me too. Thanks, Lucha.
That was Sansara Taylor, co-initiator of Refuse Fascism and a writer for RevCom.us, being interviewed by Lucha Bright. And now we're going to share some of the music people have been making against Trump. So right now, let's hear some of Commander-in-Chief by Demi Lovato.
Were you ever taught when you were young? If you mess with things selfishly, they're bound to come undone. I'm not the only one that's been affected and resented every story you've spun, and I'm a lucky one. Cause there are people worse off that have suffered enough. Haven't they suffered enough? But you can't get enough of shutting down systems for personal gain, fighting fires with liars and praying for rain. Do you get off on pain? We're not pawns in your game. Commander-in-Chief, honestly, if I did the things you do, I couldn't sleep. Seriously, do you even know the truth? We're in a state of crisis. People are dying while you line your pockets deep. Commander-in-Chief, how does it feel to still be able to breathe? We were taught when we were young, if we fight for what's right, there won't be justice for just some. Won't give up, stand our ground. We'll be in the streets while you're bunkering down. Loud and proud, best believe, we'll still take a knee while you're Commander-in-Chief. Honestly, if I did the things you do, I couldn't sleep. Seriously, do you even know the truth? We're in a state of crisis. People are dying while you line your pockets deep. Commander-in-Chief, how does it feel to still be able to breathe?
That was Commander-in-Chief by Demi Lovato. Next, I want to share some of the sounds from Saturday, November 7th, when the world heard that Trump, the loser, had lost and poured into the streets. All right, now before we hear from Coco Das and Andy Z of Refuse Fascism talking about the pledge to all the people of the world, I'm going to play a reading of the pledge by Cornel West, Arturo O'Farrell, Jody Sweetin, Layla Hathaway, Rosanna Arquette, Jessica Caramore, and Norwood Fisher.
It's like a relief, you know? There's so many things going on in the world, and America, this is a historic day, man. Just grateful to be out here with all these people. All we want is a change, man. That's all we want. Feels good, man.
Yeah, Trump.
now, before we hear from Coco Das and Andy Z of Refuse Fascism talking about the pledge to all the people of the world, I'm going to play a reading of the pledge by Cornel West, Arturo O'Farrell, Jody Sweeten, Layla Hathaway, Rosanna Arquette, Jessica Caramore, and Norwood Fisher.
In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America.
The Trump-Pence regime must go.
We pledge that we will speak, we will stand, we will shout and march together.
We pledge to stop a regime that imperils the people of the world and the earth itself.
We will take to the streets day after day and call forth others. We demand Trump-Pence out now.
We will not stop until they're gone.
We do not comply with the regime putting targets on the backs of blacks, denying women control of their bodies, forcing LGBTQ people back into the closet.
We do not accept a society ruled by hate and bigotry.
Ignorance and brutality, demeaning and cursing other peoples and countries, and threatening them with destruction.
There can be no more children torn from parents or locked in cages. No more fire and fury from the mouth of a demented bully with his finger on the nuclear trigger.
No more mass COVID deaths from science-hating lunacy. No more law and order of official terror by bullets, batons, and tear gas.
No longer can we live with howling mobs resurrecting Jim Crow. Fascist, and I want to say that again, fascist thugs attacking our protests and the right to vote stolen by defenders of the Confederacy.
We will not worship the flag or accept a theocracy.
We will not become collaborators on a march to a racist genocide. We will not hand the future to scorchers of the planet.
4 more years, 4 more months.
4 more years, 4 more months, and it could be too late.
To change the course of history as the Trump-Pence regime sabotages the election and drags humanity to the edge of extinction.
Here and now, we pledge to unite in our millions,
rising together in nonviolent resistance to stop a great horror.
We pledge to stay in the streets, overcoming fear and uncertainty until this vicious American fascism is brought to a halt.
We pledge our determination to prevail over a regime that imperils the people of the world and the earth itself.
And in the name of humanity.
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 We refuse to accept a fascist America.
On Monday, November 9th, a full-page ad with a pledge to the people of the world was placed in the New York Times by refusefascism.org. It was signed by Chuck D., Cornel West, Noam Chomsky, Lily Wachowski, Arturo O'Farrell, Jody Sweeten, and a host of other public intellectuals, prominent artists, and public figures. And it is a call to people of conscience to act in this moment. It was co-authored by Andy Z, who's the co-host of the RNL show, and Coco Das, both of whom are members of the editorial board of refusefascism.org, as am I. So I'm very happy to have them all on Zoom to talk a little bit about this ad with me here today. Andy, Coco, welcome.
Hi, Sansara. Hi, Andy.
Hi, Coco, from the south. From the south, and Sansara, not here with me in the RNL studio, but in New York City. Glad
I know.
To be here.
It's good to be with you virtually. It's really, especially right now with this ad that just came out. And I know that when we produce this, we're gonna share a reading of that. So people have just heard this, but I think it'd be very good. Maybe we could just start, Coco, with you to talk a little bit about what's been the reaction and the response to this ad being placed, to the content, to the pledge. What kind of responses is this generating?
Well, I think overwhelmingly the response has been really positive. And, you know, this part of why we wrote this was to be a wake-up call. In this ad, you have, in this pledge, actually, you have the reasons, all the reasons why this regime has to go, and actually how we have the power and responsibility to act in this moment and to demand that the regime must go and drive this regime out. And so I think we got more than 1,000 new signers yesterday. Oh, some of the comments we've gotten is like, you know, I want to go get this and frame it so that I can look at it in the future, you know, pass it down to people in the future. And, you know, I saw one comment today that said, in my lifetime, I've never seen anything like this, which I thought was, you know, I'd like to know more about what this person meant by that. But this is something really profound, hitting the pages of the New York Times, the newspaper of record, at a time of, you know, on the one hand, you had jubilation over Biden winning the election, you know, the media announcing that Biden has won the election on Saturday. And on the other hand, right today, just a few minutes ago, I saw that Pompeo said, we are going to have a smooth transition to a second Trump term. And what a nightmare that will be for humanity. So in that mix that this ad landed at a turning point in history and at a moment of great danger and great possibility, and that the people actually have to be a part of deciding what kind of future we're going to have. It's been very profound. I mean, it's been shared, not only, you know, shared on social media by signers of the pledge, but also hundreds and hundreds of other people who are really connecting to the words in the pledge and to the momentousness of what is happening, what we're living through right now.
So I actually just wanted to pick up on a point that you were just making, because it's interesting. The day that the pledge came out, I wanted to read the front page of the New York Times. It says, Biden turns his attention to transition while Trump refuses to concede defeat. And I wondered, Andy, if you wanted to say a little bit more about this. Pledge was written before the election. It was a call and a moral call to conscience. It's very poetic. It's a very profound statement. That was true then, and for many people, they think, well, the election happened, Trump is over, and yet this was published just a couple days after that announcement of Biden's victory. And why was that important to still publish, in your view? How do you see this in this moment?
Well, I think as it turned out, it was very important to have it appear on Monday. I have to be honest, it wasn't necessarily our intent. We've been trying to get it published for the you know, the week when the actual election took place. And this is what you just expressed, Sansara, the contrast between, you know, the reality that Biden has won and the election. Clearly, he's won the Electoral College votes. It's indisputable, actually, about that in terms of the count and in the different states, these outrageous lawsuits. And then on the other hand, here's the declaration that they're not going to accept it. And so that it came, this pledge that pledges our determination to prevail over a regime that imperils the people, the world, and the earth itself. It's very important that it came out, as Coco said, going through all the features of this fascist regime, what they were bringing down on the people, reminding people of that, and what it would be to have to live under this. And we're in a situation where Biden won. He won the election. You know, and these people have to get over that, and we got to move on to something different. But they're not ready to move on, and for, you know, we don't know all the reasons, but it's actually a perilous situation potentially in all of this. And so I'm very glad that the ad came out when it did, and given the, you know, the wonderful celebrations that took place, which we're going to be showing people some of a little bit later in the RNL show, that people accomplished a lot. They went up against so much to organize, to go out and vote. up against voter suppression, intimidation, lies, innuendos, robocalls, all of this. And when Biden won, it was like just a burden was lifted off of people's back and they danced in the streets, as they should. But then at the same time, we face a situation where not only is it's not just Trump being petulant about this or self-absorbed, but it's actually an entire regime that's standing behind him. And he still is in power, okay? And he has a lot of levers at his hands, and he has a mass movement that he's threatening to actually mobilize around this. So that there is still a danger here, which is why Refuse Fascism is called a protest for this coming Saturday. But speaking to the pledge itself, you know, that headline that says a pledge to all the people of the world in the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America, the Trump-Pence regime must go. And that was actually very glad that was the must go is in the headline, because that still remains the task. They're still in power. He can do a lot of damage, even should they concede. He can do a lot of damage to unravel things between now and the inauguration of President Biden. He can do tremendous damage. Plus, they're gathering their forces. They're going to make, you know, Newt Gingrich, this advisor to Trump and arch conservative fascist, you know. Anyway, I'm not going to get involved in cursing Newt Gingrich, but he did say that, you know, the Trump-Pence regime, the 2016 to 2020, will be seen as a turning point in American history, and that 2020 could become the rallying cry of a stolen election from the Republicans, right, from Trump, and be used to garn to coalesce their movement going forward. So in any event, there's a serious threat. But we have to be very clear that people want a great victory in voting out Trump, and they have to stand on that victory and not allow these people to overturn the election. This is very important. And yes, Refuse Fascism, we're sounding the alarm, we're calling people into streets, and the pledge itself gives people all the reasons. And it says the future of humanity hinges on this. So it's a time to celebrate, but it's a time to not let down our guard. And in fact, we need to get mobilized right now off of this election and be ready for should they continue this course, which they very well might, and it's not impossible for them to even prevail. And if they start to do that, we're gonna have to really be in the streets fighting very hard for out now. And then that will be, this is subverting every norm of elections and any sense of fairness that the people face right now. And that'll become a very sharp battle should they start to prevail. They have no goddamn case for this, to be just clear. Well, they have a little bit of a case, though, or a case that they can make and not prevail according to the law as it is. But that has never stopped a fascist regime, let alone this one. So it's a very complicated situation. It's important that this pledge came out now so that people are considering that this isn't all just over and we're going back to normal. No, there's no normal here. The country is sharply divided, became more divided through this election. And now we've got to see that this regime is removed from power and then go forward and struggle from there.
Yeah, I was just gonna read towards the end of the pledge, because I do think that there's a lot packed into the words, and actually the more you return to it, the more it gives shape to a lot of what people really feel in their hearts that they're sick of, that they want to see ended, a lot of what they were in the streets dancing to see lifted. But there's also, it's forging a will and setting standards of what needs to be done, and I think it holds up in the wake of the election quite well. It says, here and now, we pledge to unite in our millions, rising together in nonviolent resistance to stop a great horror. We pledge to stay in the streets, overcoming fear and uncertainty until this American fascism is brought to a halt. And this fascism is still on the move very much, even as they've suffered a defeat, and that's very important as well. I wonder, Coco, you and Andy were the authors of this pledge, and it is a pledge. And I think it is true that it's summoning people to act. It's saying we will stay in the streets, and there is a great import in refusefascism.org. We are calling for protests this Saturday and for people to stay in the streets. There's a need frequently for calls to political protests, but this is not that per se, it's a pledge. and it's very poetic. It's written in a certain way. It's been signed by a number of artists. It was, I forgot to mention, the graphic design was beautifully done by the artist Shepard Fairey. A lot of people were involved in this as a pledge that serves a different kind of a role. Why did you feel it was important to do a pledge in this case?
I think in any momentous movement for justice or for social change, the role of art, the role of poetry and giving poetic voice to the hopes and dreams of people is really very important. And we have you know, written very stirring calls to action, but to have it, you know, something, the thing about poetry is how it can distill such big ideas into, you know, a few lines, a few words, and to be able to do that in, you know, one page, just with a lot of white space around it, I think is very important. It allows people to connect actually to the ideas in a different way. And it does reach out to broad sections of society. We need every corner of society in this struggle to stop this American fascism that does imperil the people of the world and the earth itself. That is not an exaggeration. And it is going to take the youth, the, you know, intellectuals, the musicians, the artists, the, you know, lawyers, teachers, everybody getting into this movement together. And I think there's a distillation in that with this pledge, with the breadth of people that have signed and put their name on this, and also in the way that it makes this call, the way that it calls out to people. It's a very visceral, very human way to bring people into their, back to their humanity. You know, one thing that fascism does is it degrades everybody's sense of morality as you are forced to accept what you never thought you would accept. So, you know, Andy and I were talking to one of the signers, Lily Wachowski, and she was saying how the poetic voice of the pledge really, really reminded her of our shared humanity. And, you know, she's also written very, very poetically herself about this in Lit Hub and about unleashing the radical, our radical imagination and world building, the importance of building this world of actually what it could look like, what to not accept this and to actually struggle for a whole different future where humanity can thrive, where we actually keep a promise to the people of the world. And we claim our humanity along with everybody, the 7 billion on this planet, who the president of this country can actually destroy. So I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, I think it does. Andy, if you want to add anything to that, or if there's anything else you want to touch on in this moment and with how this pledge connects with this moment.
Well, first, I just want to, I think Coco put it really well. And when, you know, when we decided to do a pledge, we were looking at that things were really going to come to a head this fall. And we also had recognized that many people, we had just come off that beautiful uprising actually against the police murder of George Floyd. And yet people weren't really seeing the danger. I mean, just everybody should just take a minute and imagine had Trump won this election, what we would be facing. It's almost unspeakable. You see what they're doing now, having clearly lost. Imagine had they won. It would have been a tremendous horror show, but we had to actually wait. We had to, I can't say it better than Coco. We had to return people to their humanity, return them to all that had happened over the last 4 years, what they'd been learned to not accept in their deepest soul, if you want to put it that way, but accept as part of the reality that they're going to try and live through and also concentrated because of the pandemic and the utter disregard of for people's lives at the expense of the regime. And so such that the Republican Party and their followers almost became a death cult, and at its core really was that. And so I just want to echo what she said. And one more point I want to echo is that this is not just something that Coco and I wrote and then people put their name on. There were obviously 1,000 people did last night, but the Lily and Arturo and Cornell, different people. This was a process where people really did some soul searching in terms of putting this out into the New York Times. We wrote it. We wrote it months ago, but people really had to wrestle with this. So I think the thing I maybe just to add to this is that, the pledge is written earlier and it calls for out now and people to take to the streets day after day. That was very necessary in the fall. It might be necessary again right now. Right now, I think what we really need to do is get people out in massive numbers on Saturday to say we don't accept this stealing of the election, this overturning of a clear mandate and victory for Biden, which does have to be certified. It is not certified until December. Actually, it's not even, there's even another date in January. And we need to be able to sound the alarm to people to understand that it's not over until he's out of the White House. I don't know that we need to, we'll have to see that people are going to be in the streets every day in massive numbers. I kind of think that's probably not what's going to happen or even exactly what we're going to call for. We should be mobilized in such a way that we can take to the streets at each turn. And it might be necessary to do that. It very well could be. If he starts with these rallies and it starts connecting and people are, these fascists with their caravans are mobbing the streets and courts are starting to find in their direction and it's going to the Supreme Court, then all bets are off and we have to really mobilize. But so that's one thing I wanted to say. I also have to say the day after the election, the crew of the first several signers on that call, we had a very heavy day. I mean, one of the heaviest days I ever remember where people who knew what this was were punched in the gut. That half of America said, yeah, I'm okay with concentration camps. I'm okay with tearing children from their parents. I'm okay with white supremacy. I'm okay with a grabber who is going to ban the right of women to control their own bodies. I'm okay with all that because for whatever reason that they had, which fundamentally meant that the reason was that they agreed enough with that to say it was okay. So we were people were very, very upset about that. Now, we have our plan for struggle going forward, but I think we also have to look deeper. What are the reasons behind this? Where is this white supremacy coming from? Why did fascism take root in this country so profoundly? Why is it still here, even now? After they lost the election, you're seeing the mobilization of the entire Republican Party. He's changing people in positions in the government. It should be cut and dry, but it's not. There's deeper reasons for that, and that's something that, speaking for myself and I think others on the editorial board, we went into this deeply. Many of us looked at the work of Bob Avakian, which people can find on revcom.us, that goes very deeply into the causes, the roots of the white supremacy, the roots of the patriarchy, how that's woven into the system. I'm not going to go into explaining any of that, but it really encouraging people to go there. And actually, one of the things that contributed to the pledge itself was a statement Bob Avakian made on August 1st on the acute situation we face. And whether people agree or disagree with our solution to that, which is the new communism he developed and a revolution when that becomes possible and preparing for the now, whether you want to, you believe in this system, there was some very important insight in that piece. And of course, speaking for the RNL show and myself, I want to encourage people to see the deeper problems in the system itself and what it's going to take to get a system where humanity could truly flourish. But that's an ongoing conversation and discussion and debate and political work we have to do. So for right now, people have to have their eyes wide open at what could be, what's developing with his refusal to accept the results of the election, even as we stand firm that Biden won, We were right to celebrate and get off the stage, Donald Trump, and go back to your golf courses, crawl under a sand trap or whatever else you got to do. And then we're going to have to go forward and continue the struggle around this fascist strain in America and what America has done. That's from my perspective. But those are things that I would just want to add. And I want to underscore for people that Refuse Fascism is an organization of people from many different political points of view, and in any struggle it advocates is for nonviolent sustained struggle of the masses of people to drive out the regime. In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America, and our shared humanity is what brings us together.
Well, listen, ending back on our shared humanity, I think I really want to thank you guys for talking about this. It's silly to say to Andy for coming on the RNL show, since you're always on the RNL, the Revolution Nothing Less show. But thank you, Coco, for coming on the RNL show. And thank you both for having this conversation. I do want to encourage everybody, if you haven't yet, and even if you have, go to refusefascism.org, read the pledge to the people of the world, read it out loud, and actually work those words and that commitment. It is a pledge. Make that pledge, join making that pledge, join others in making that pledge and spread it. Donate to it, it needs to get out, share it broadly. And I'm gonna be broadcasting this on my radio show on WPFW and maybe some other stations so that we get the word out more about this. And it's just really wonderful to see you both from afar. It's been too long, and I there's so much love in this, and I really love you guys. Always, but also for putting this together. It means a great deal. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Sansara. Thanks,
Andy. Thank you. And thank you, Coco. Thank you, Sansara.
We are confronted by, we are now being ruled by, a fascist regime. And here is the shorter story, the more particular reasons why things have come to this crossroads in this country with potentially disastrous consequences for human beings everywhere. The USA is a country which established its territory and built the foundation of its wealth through the armed conquest of land, genocide, slavery, and ruthless exploitation of successive waves of immigrants to America. And it has continued as a country marked by white supremacy, patriarchy and male supremacy, and other oppressive divisions, while expanding its domination into an empire stretching across the globe. Sitting atop a lopsided world of profound inequalities and plunder of the environment, it would take the resources of nearly five Earths for the rest of the world to have the kind of consumer society that exists in the US. All this backed up and enforced by a massive machinery of death and devastation, the US military, and reinforced with a constant barrage of ideas and culture, rationalizing and justifying all this oppression and destruction, propagated through an equally massive machinery of molding public opinion. Today, while the US is, and loudly proclaims itself to be, the world's number one superpower, it is riddled with sharpening contradictions and facing growing challenges within the country and internationally. And this has brought forth a fascist regime that now holds the reins of power with the finger of a demented bully on the nuclear button. A regime that, without exaggeration, threatens not just greatly heightened suffering for the masses of humanity, but the very existence of humanity itself. So this poses sharply the immediate urgent challenge we face. The truth, another terrible truth that must be faced, is that in the context of profound and acute contradictions that are asserting or reasserting themselves in ways that are tearing at the very fabric and deepening cracks in the foundation of this country, at the same time as the American empire is facing serious challenges internationally, fascism is one possible resolution of this on the terms of this system and its ruling class, even as this is a horror for humanity. While the Constitution does establish the separation of church and state, and the Christian fascists are wrong or simply lying when they insist that the founding documents of this country established it as a Christian nation. The reality is that Christianity has all along been the unofficial state religion of this country, and the country's identity throughout its history has been as a white Christian nation, grounded in male supremacy as well as white supremacy, and driven by a manifest destiny to dominate not only the continent of North America, but ultimately the world as a whole. All this has been brought into question and has become the focus of intense struggle going back to the 1960s and in some important ways back to the Civil War. And while developments internationally, including the demise of the Soviet Union, have given further impetus to the globalization of the capitalist world economy, this very heightened globalization has propelled changes that have sharpened contradictions within the U.S. as well as on a world level, particularly with an emerging capitalist China mounting a challenge to U.S. global economic dominance. At the same time as this heightened globalization, under conditions of Western imperialist domination, has wreaked havoc in countries throughout the Third World, including the Middle East and other places where Islam is the prevailing religion, adding fuel to a virulent Islamic fundamentalism that has declared war on the decadent West and on infidels and others oriented toward the West and facilitating its imperial domination. In order to bring about any positive resolution to all this, even short of abolishing and moving beyond this whole system, it is necessary and crucial to break with the normal routine and the normal workings of the political process.
That was Bob Avakian with his piece, What Has Given Rise to the Situation in Which We Have a Fascist Regime Ruling the U.S. You can find the whole talk at revcom.us. So stay vigilant, stay in the streets, follow revcom.us and refusefascism.org. The 7 billion people of the planet are counting on us. Never forget that. We're going to go out now with America Goddamn by Outer National and others. Talk to you again next week.
Slavery hasn't changed, my friend. It's just adopted a new face.
Goddamn!
I couldn't stand it.
Goddamn!
I'm treated like a piece of shit.